welcome to episode 3 of Tech Talk. This is Ashwin.
And this is Rhea.
So last episode, we covered the basics of cloud computing, and essentially we dived into the three kinds of delivery models, which is infrastructure as a service, which is also referred to as IaaS, platform as a service, which is referred to as PaaS, and software as a service, which is referred to as SaaS.
So to recap some of the material and the content you just mentioned, Ashwin. So IaaS, it provides hardware and software for servers, storage, and networks. So the users have the most control over the infrastructure. Whereas PaaS, it's a set of tools and services that are designed to facilitate application coding and deploying. So the target audience for this, I would suppose, are developers. And there are SaaS applications that are designed for front-end users that are accessed over the web. So for SaaS applications, the users must be familiar with the API of the particular application, which is what the user interacts with over the web. So to tail off of that, Ashwin, we are going to talk about the three layers of any application. So when we think about common applications that users are using, such as Uber or Netflix, usually they architecturally, there are three layers to it. So there's the presentation layer, the application layer, and the data layer. So take a shot at what you think the presentation layer is.
Okay. So presentation layer to me, just by the way that word sounds, it's the front end of something, right? How it appears to me when I use that application on the user's end.
That's very true. So the presentation layer is what the user interacts with. So if you, falling back to our example of Gmail, the presentation layer is what we see, like how we compose the mail, the interface, that's the presentation layer. And beneath that lies an application layer. And application layer is where all the business logic sits. So how do you translate the user activities to collect data and connect it to the database? So that's what the application layer is, and that's where all the business logic would be sitting. And today's topic would focus on the data layer. Like, how are these data structured? Because the reason I thought this would be a good topic for our third episode is because we live in a data-centric world. There's applications everywhere. You write an email, it's stored somewhere. So storage, data, these are words that we come across every day. So it's important for the users to understand how these data are structured and the different ways we can model these data. So that's the topic for today. And to go off of that, we are going to discuss SQL versus NoSQL, meaning relational versus non-relational databases.
Okay, so just recapping, maybe we were talking about Uber and Netflix as an app. It has three layers. One is the presentation layer, which the user interacts with, and then there's an application layer beneath that, and then there's a data layer. And today we're diving into data layer.
Correct. So I would suppose you would ask what SQL is.
I've heard a lot about SQL. I know it is SQL as when you write it, but nothing beyond that. So what is SQL?
So SQL is also known as a relational database. So data can be managed in two types, either through a relational database or a non-relational database. So the relational part is called SQL. So SQL is a collection of data items that are organized in tables. So everyone uses or at some point have used Excel documents. You have a column and you have a row. That's how data is usually organized. So relational databases or SQL data stores, data in rows and columns. So each row contains all the information about one entity, and each column contains all the separate data points connecting to that one entity. Does that make sense?
Can you just give me an example?
Just think about a table, my weekly food schedule. So if I write Rhea and Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday would be the columns, the row would be Rhea. We can add a second row, Ashwin, so we can track what we eat every day. That's just a simple table example. And that would be an example of a relational database.
Okay, so if any data is organized in rows and columns, and that would mean it's a relational database.
A SQL database, yes, at a very high level. So some standard commands that users would use is select, insert, update, delete, create and drop. And these are all Excel. Like most people who use Excel or have used some kind of tables in some form have come across these terms, and it applies to a SQL database as well.
I use a bit of Excel, so I'm usually typing equal to, which triggers the formula button of Excel, and I say insert or equal to sum.
Exactly. So the main commands, as I've mentioned, are select, insert, update, delete, create, and drop. So now take a shot at like what you think NoSQL would be, given you know what SQL database systems are like.
Right. NoSQL, I'm guessing, would be the opposite of SQL, so something that does not have rows and columns.
Correct. So it's something that's not a table. It just says in the name, it's not SQL.
Yeah.
Let's brainstorm some of the kinds of other types of data we have. Like all our data in the world that we see today cannot be organized in a table format. So take a stab at what you think the other types of data are. Just generally the things that you come across.
What I can think of is immediately data, kinds of data that can be organized in rows and columns. But if I had to think about something that cannot be organized in rows and columns, maybe nothing comes to mind immediately, actually.
Pictures? Usher in pictures?
Hmm.
Pictures is data. Data about the pictures, that's also data. That's called metadata. So if you think about it, anything we see or we collect and we document, it can be some form or falls into some kind of data storage. So NoSQL targets to organize these in different formats. So there are four main categories that NoSQL is organized in. So the first is key value stores. So key value is stores mean that data is stored in an array of key value pairs. So there's a key and a value. So the key is the attribute name, which can be linked to a value. So think of it like you have this whole mass of data, like a clump of data. How do you know this point A connects to which other data point? So that's when you assign a key and it pairs with the value. So they come together.
So because there's no rows and columns to identify the pairing or to identify the relation, we're coming up with other ways to relate the data.
Exactly. So how else do you think you can relate the data? Is by a key and a value. So there's a key that only opens one door or is related to one door.
Got it. And would there be a real life example for this that our listeners could relate to easily?
Real life example. I mean, most databases use some kind of key value stores. So if you think about, I'll bring up this example. So you have product ID in one column. Then you have the type, like it can be book ID or album ID, track ID, movie ID, and another column. So these are known as the primary key, and they relate to certain types of values. So book ID can be the Odyssey or Homer, and then the track ID can be Bach, or the movie ID can be, Transformers 3. So these primary keys, the product number, would be relating to some kind of product name through a value attribute. Does that make sense?
Rhea, I kind of get it, but like just to reaffirm what I'm understanding and to get your thoughts on whether I got this right, let's say I'm using Netflix. So I'm on Netflix now, and then I see home, TV shows, movies, latest, and my list. And I would assume that these are the primary keys. And each of these are keys by themselves. And let's say I click on movies, and within movies I have another filter, which is genres. And genres becomes the second level of key, and within that I have different kinds of genres, right? There's action, anime, Canadian, children and family. And let's say I click on one of them, and let's say I click room. Room here is the movie, and that becomes the value. Am I getting this right?
Exactly. Exactly. So to summarize, primary keys are divided into two types. There's a partition key and there's a sort key. And through a unique identifier, it connects to one value attribute. So if you are to click on home on Netflix and go to trending now or continue watching. That you can imagine as the sort key, which is the second type of primary key. Once you click on the movie, that's the value attribute that's attached to that sort key. Do you understand?
Yeah, so the home is the first level of filter, the first key, and then there's trending, which is the second, which is the sort key, exactly. Which is another level of filter, and then I finally land on something that I want to watch, and that mm-hmm. becomes the value, which maps to a particular key.
Exactly. And with key value stores, there's a unique identifier where the primary key is connected to the value. And that's important to remember.
Okay. The primary key is connected to the value.
Exactly. So now moving on to the second type of databases that are available for NoSQL, it's document. So in document databases, data is stored in documents. So instead of rows and columns, these documents are grouped in collections. So think of them like song albums. So you have all these songs which are like documents, and you kind of group them together as a collection and to release your vinyl or your CD. So each document has an entirely different structure. And some examples, I can go into it. But before I go into examples, do you follow what a document database is?
Sure. I mean, it's a kind of NoSQL database. So again, you cannot do rows and columns here. You have to figure out another way to do it.
Is it that
Netflix at any point will use only one kind of database to store its all its data? Like, for example, is it only using key value stores, or is it using a combination depending on the kind of data they want to use or store?
So depending on the kind of data, Ashwin, they use, there can be a combination of data types. So, I mean, you can simultaneously have a NoSQL database and a SQL server.
Interesting.
Because data is only not one type of data. You store, there's so many types of data, especially for a system like Netflix.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So that actually helps clarify a few things. So Netflix, for example, could use a SQL database, could use a NoSQL, and within NoSQL could use a key value store, could also use a document database.
Exactly.
And that depends on the kind of data they want to store, the kind of classification they're looking at.
Yep.
Awesome. Yeah. Okay. So that's document database. I do get it a little, but I think at a basic level, I do understand what it is.
Right. So now that you know key value stores, document databases, the third type in NoSQL databases are wide column databases. So now, instead of tables, in columnar databases, we have column families. So you have like five columns, and we create families of these.
Okay, so, but this is also columns and rows. So when we say columns and rows, I'm thinking about SQL.
So SQL is column and row. There's some kind of relation between the column and the row, correct? In wide column right. databases, that relationship does not need to exist. It can just be a cluster of columns.
So it can be absolutely unrelated.
It can be absolutely unrelated. It can be unstructured. So oftentimes in NoSQL databases, the data doesn't have so much of a structure. It's just, as I like to see it, it's like a dump of data.
Got it.
So that's what wide column databases are. So the person doesn't need to know all of the columns up front like you would in a SQL server. So you might not even name your columns. And each row doesn't have to have the same column number. Like the same number of columns.
Got it. And is there any example that our listeners would relate to?
So examples like these are harder to know because they're all back-end, you see?
Right, right.
So they are like structures of data. This is like more theory. So when you have a lot of data and you have so many columns, but each column doesn't map to a row, what do you do with that? You store it in a wide column database.
And each of these data points are important, but you just haven't figured out how they relate to each other, but still want to store it?
How to structure them. Because if you think about it, when you create a table, you have to know which row connects to which column and how they are related, correct?
Yeah, got it. And so what is the use of this? Because at this point, I'm not sure how they're related. What's the use of all of this data? Like, what am I going to do with it?
Big data. I'm sure like buzzword has been heard in the industry for many years now. Big data, metadata, these are all stored in these kinds of NoSQL databases because there is no structure that can be given to this kind of data.
Got it. And is that all? Are these the three kinds of NoSQL databases?
Nope. There's a fourth one, graph database. And these databases are used to store data whose relations are best represented in some kind of graph. So think of like a decision tree.
Okay.
So those are more kinds of graph databases where you have a node and you have properties branching out, just like a tree. And then you have lines. So decision trees are very good examples of graph kind of databases.
Awesome. So there's four kinds of NoSQL databases. We have key value stores, we have document databases, we have wide column databases, and we have graph databases.
Exactly.
How does a company decide which database they should use for different kinds of data?
So that's when the long-standing debate between to whether to use SQL or NoSQL comes in. So what my approach would be is to look at the data, whether we can establish the relationships between the data points. If so, can we do it in a table format? And if so, then yes, we can go in with a relational database.
Which is SQL.
Which is SQL, exactly. And if not, and if it's unstructured data, we are dealing with a lot of picture content or video content, it can be NoSQL database. But there's another advantage of using a SQL database, which is why financial institutions usually gravitate towards using a SQL database, and that's because of ACID compliance.
ACID?
Yes.
Is that what ACID. You said? Okay. That's interesting. Is that an acronym or?
Another acronym for you, Ashwin.
Oh, wow. This is great. Let me take notes. What is ACID?
So ACID stands for atomicity, consistency, isolation, and durability. So your question might be, what is atomicity? So when a transaction must be completed in its entirety or not at all. So if a transaction aborts in the middle or something happens in the middle, all the operations up to that point, they must be completely nullified. And this is really important when you're dealing with financial services transactions. And that's possible in a SQL server.
Got it. So for example, when I'm trying to pay a bill online, mm-hmm. and suddenly my internet goes off or there's some Wi-Fi issue, just when I'm trying to pay and saying, okay, paying now and it's buffering, and that's when I lose the connection and it just drops and I have to start that process all over again. Is that an example of atomicity?
Yes, but make sure your financial institution is ACID compliant. And they're using relational database.
Right. Now I'm guessing most do, right? Because
yes.
Yeah. I do bank with one of the big four banks in Canada, so I guess I'm hoping they have ACID compliance.
I'm sure they do. So the second point in ACID would be consistency, which means that a transaction must transform a database from one consistent state to another consistent state. So in other words, all the data in a database must work as a state machine. So that database will ensure that all the data is consistent at all times with all the rules. So when you're making an update to your table or to your database, it has to be in the consistent state, meaning all the rules will apply to the new data set as well. So the third one in ACID compliance is isolation. So this means that each transaction must occur independently of other transactions. And if you think about it, it really makes sense. So in other words, queries and transactions always run at one point in time. So you can query a data while many other users are changing datas, and you will not see the changes that they are making, and they will not see the changes that others are making. So it's happening in isolation of one another.
I had a quick question. So let's say we're using the cloud version of Word on OneDrive and or Google Docs, for example, you and I both are making edits on that one document.
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to see your changes and you're able to see mine. So in that case, is the data not isolated?
It is not isolated. It's the complete opposite of that, in fact.
Could you think of an example where a user, a listener, for example, on a day-to-day basis would interact with something that would involve isolation of data in the back end?
Of course. So when you're doing transactions with your financial institution, it's obviously ACID compliant. So it's happening in isolation. You don't know what the other users of the bank, how they are changing the database. You don't know what kind of queries they are doing or performing. So therefore, your transaction is happening in isolation, or your activity or updates to your database is happening in isolation from others.
So if I'm buying a ticket online for a hockey game and you're buying a ticket online for, let's say, a concert game, that is happening in isolation, right? Because let's say we're banking with the same bank, and you are transacting at the same time that I am, and we both are paying for our tickets on our own computers, different places. That is isolation.
If we have the same financial institution, yes, that is isolation.
Yes, assuming we have an account in the same bank.
Exactly. That's correct. So the last part would be durability. So this means that the committed transactions, they're fully recoverable unless there is some mechanism where you have permanent deletes. So think of it this way. There's no permanent deletes on these data transactions, although the user might make deletes on this. So that means the data is durable and they'll be written in some kind of a permanent data store or index file.
So you're not losing any data. It's always recoverable.
It's always recoverable because they're archiving the data. You don't really delete the data completely.
Wouldn't that lead to a lot of backlog? Wouldn't they, in the eventual stages, think about this data being absolutely obsolete? Let's say a financial institution has stored this data of a customer who lived 100 years ago. There's literally no use of that data in the back end. Would they at some point decide to delete this?
Usually banks do, or financial institutions or systems have like a 5-year, 10-year, and after that they keep moving into some kind of like cold store databases that I'll discuss in the next episode. So yes, there is some kind of removal mechanism, otherwise it will be an infinite amount of data, but there's stages of that too. So after 5 years, maybe you will be unable to find your transaction because it's in some kind of cold storage. It might take longer for you to recover that data because it's in another format. So, of course, that happens, but it's time-boxed as well. It's not an infinite amount of years.
Got it. So this gives us a good understanding of SQL and non-SQL databases and why you would pick one over the other. And we spoke also a little about asset compliance, and which is yet another acronym.
So, yeah, to recap, usually users go with a SQL database, which is relational, for ACID compliance, and because if they can structure the data in a tabular form. Otherwise, it's NoSQL. It's as simple as that. So I know the content was quite heavy for the users, for our listeners perhaps, but if you really think about it, these are just commonsensical ways for storing data in our day-to-day lives.
Got it. And this is just one part of the application, and the other two parts are the presentation layers and application layers, which we will touch at some point. And we just spoke about data layer today. How does data in the back end get organized, whether in tabular forms or a relational form, which is SQL, and whether in a non-tabular, or when we talk about big data and things that are not easily related, we would use a NoSQL database.
Yep, so SQL and NoSQL to cap it off.
Got it, and SQL is ACID compliant.
Yes, SQL is ACID compliant.
Thanks, Ria, that was really interesting. I'm so glad we did this, and we're gradually moving up the learning curve, so I'm excited to have our listeners tell us what they thought about this episode and how they're progressing with us. I'd put some links down in the show notes for you guys to refer to later in case you want a deep dive on material, but that is it from me. And thank you, Ria. Thank you for joining. Would you have any tips for our listeners about how they can improve just in terms of knowledge before the next episode comes up?
Well, listen to the podcast as well as do some of your own research to understand these terms that we discussed, like key value stores, document database, and some of the other terminology that we use throughout the podcast. So that will really help consolidate what you've listened to just now.